So I'd like to reflect a little bit this morning on love, on compassion, and on forgiveness. They're very interconnected. Now, we've talked about love, and mostly when I've spoken about love, I've spoken about love as it's deeply innate within us. It's part of it's an expression of life. It's an expression of our true nature. And Melina is just a little bundle of love, a little love berry. She's just, you know, full of wonder and connection and curiosity about life. You know, you just see it. So, but there are other ways to, our loving as human beings is connected with different kinds of things as well. There are different expressions of love or different forms of love. And it's good to know about them and think about them and be aware of how they're present in the way that we love. And compassion is really an expression of love in the presence of suffering. So they're deeply connected. So when we say that we love something or somebody, when I say I love chocolate, you know, it's not an expression of unconditional love, is it? It's something different. It's and you know, Melina loves her mommy, and part of that is that, you know, her mommy's the source of her all these pleasant experiences of touching, of nurturing, of, you know, of relief from discomfort. So this sensuous aspect of love is a very natural part of how we learn to love, and it is it's good. It's not itself in itself bad. And it is based on pleasant experiences. So when we experience a pleasant experience, you know, and it's particularly pleasant to us, we sometimes say we love it, you know. I love this time of year, you know, sunny and cool. So many things that I love in this way. It's part of what makes life beautiful. And it's based on pleasant feelings, having pleasant feelings, liking our pleasant feelings. And emotional love is another expression of love, that we feel good emotionally with some people. You know, we're happy. You know, I realize that a lot of you know, the love that we feel with our friends, and the love, at least for me anyway, I've experienced this, is, you know, people I love to be with, it's a lot because I love who I am when I'm with that person. I love what comes out. I love, you know, either the joy or the, you know, the honesty or the, you know, the warmth. You know, I just love what happens when I'm with that person. It feels good. And it's also based on pleasant feelings. You know, that I really like it. It feels pleasant. These aspects of love, you know, it's harder to be with somebody that it's unpleasant to be with, isn't it? You know, and there are people who, because of their hurt, you know, because of their fear, because of perhaps, you know, physical or mental illness, or conditioning, social conditioning, you know, maybe deep poverty, they're hard to be with. They're hard, they don't open up. They're perhaps defensive or accusing or project things onto us that, you know, we're not really, that aren't really what's going on. And so, so it's hard to love them emotionally in this way. You know, sometimes, you know, our kids manifest this kind of behavior, or our parents or our siblings, and so there's a, you know, there is this deep commitment to keep loving and understand, and that's being held by the third kind of love, which is unconditional love. You know, this unconditional love is simply this quality of life which comes through us. It's a spiritual love. It's not based on pleasant feelings. You know, in the New Testament, Jesus says, "Be like God, who reigns on both the just and the unjust." Or another image is like the sun, that shines on everything. You know, it shines on whatever's going on. So there's a way in which this way of loving is just coming through us. It's not directed at, you know, it's not reserved for this or that person. You know, sometimes we have these carpenter ants in my house, and I always loved ants ever since I was a kid. I don't know, I just, you know, sometimes they just walk across the counter, and I think I should, you know, like, there's this just love that comes up for this amazing creature. And I think, okay, I better scoop it and put it outside, seeing somebody on the street, just seeing children playing in a park, seeing dogs playing in a park, you know, just, you know, this, we can just feel this love for life coming through us, and it's very beautiful. It's connecting. Another image is like a flower emitting fragrance, and we do nourish the earth like rain, we do warm the earth like sun, you know, we do sweeten the earth like flowers when this love is just shining through us, and when we are you know, when we're not so. So how, you know, how do we open to this? And this is all about releasing our attachment to ourself. You know, releasing the sense of I need to project, I need to protect, I need to, you know, enhance, I need to, you know, get love. You know, it's like Kabir said in his poem, you know, everybody is saying, love me. And he said, can you look at the world, you know, like the full moon, look at the world through those full moon eyes, giving what everybody is hungering for, and just allowing the heart to love freely, to love openly. So, and of course, this is not something we can force. it's something that just it flows through our being in a natural way. But we can open to it. You know, we can connect with it. The metta practice is a way of connecting to that love which is there, and we can just bring our awareness to that presence. It's touching the universality of life. It's touching the universality of, you know, this aspiration to be free from suffering, this aspiration to be happy and at peace. Now, the Dalai Lama teaches this, you know, look around, he says, and just look at an individual and say, I want to be happy, and this person also wants to be happy. I want to be free from suffering, and this person also wants to be free from suffering. So there's these simple and beautiful ways of just connecting with this this quality of a loving heart. And so in our relationships, our significant relationships, and our everyday relationships, you know, we can be aware of the ways in which the love that we're experiencing may be a sensual experience. Maybe we just love the way somebody looks, you know, that they're so pleasing, you know, that they, maybe we love the way it feels when they touch us. Maybe we love the sexual experience. There's just something, you know, sensual, a bond, a chemistry that happens, and we feel alive, you know, with them. And we can be aware, and sometimes that's not there. See, so in relationships where the love that we feel is primarily, you know, there's an imbalance of a sensual love, you know, you can be pretty sure that you know, that relationship is not going to endure, because we don't always feel sexual attraction. Sometimes a person doesn't look their best, and people grow old. We all grow old. We all chins start to sag a little bit, and everything starts to sag a little bit, and that's just life. So if we haven't developed a deeper bond than sensual love, it's not going to last, is it? And we hear about, you know, these midlife crises, and somebody finds, you know, a young, beautiful partner, and they probably hadn't built a sensual love, a deeper love. And if our love relationships are primarily emotional, if we feel that our partner has to make us feel good, or our kids have to make us feel good, or our parents have to make us feel good, you know, if we can't be with them when they are depressed or angry or disappointed or just in a bad mood, you know, if that breaks the relationship, there's an imbalance. It's emotional love, and we haven't found that deeper sense of just accepting, receiving, being present with this being who is always unfolding as we are, always becoming something new. You know, so these experiences of emotional and sensual love, as lovely as they can be, and fun and pleasant, they don't allow for the impermanence of things. They can't contain the inevitable change that occurs in relationships. So, so this quality, you know, of loving friendship, you know, which is a translation of metta, you know, loving kindness or loving friendship, has, you know, it leads us toward this unconditional loving, this life loving itself, life wondering, life being filled with wonder at how life is unfolding in what we perceive to be another. You know, this is self-other is a perception, but you know, it's part of this dance of love and life that we perceive another and we can love that other. And so this deepens, this can deepen as we bring compassion and forgiveness into these relationships, so that we can stay open. I often tell this story when I speak about love and commitment in relationships, about Joanna Macy, who's a wonderful teacher of Dharma and deep ecology, and she brings the teachings, Buddhist teachings on interdependence, into a kind of a weave with teachings on the environment and ecology and a passion for Earth and to preserve the resources of the Earth, the life of the Earth. So she tells this story about when she and her husband to be, her fiancé at that time, Fran, had decided to get married, and they went to a friend who was a minister, maybe to talk about their marriage, their wedding. And he sat down with them, and he was very happy for them. And he said something that surprised them a lot. He said, "My blessing for you is may you always be strangers to each other." So to bring that curiosity, that interest, like, who is this being having coffee with me? You know, who is this being at this moment? You know, on this day. Who is this being who is evolving as I am evolving, changing? So that brings this freshness, this innocence that, you know, I spoke about at the beginning of the week, to our experience. And so compassion is an expression of love in the presence of pain. So when we see pain, when we see suffering, when there's love, compassion arises. And you know, and if our compassion is about fixing the person or about saving the person according to our idea of how the person needs to be saved or fixed, then there's attachment. Then it's about making ourselves feel comfortable. You know, of course, compassion calls us to act. You know, so it's not that compassion is passive. Compassion calls us to act. And the action is appropriate to the circumstance. So, of course, if we see somebody who's in danger, you know, we want to protect them. If we see somebody who's hungry, we want to offer them food. Those very basic human needs. But often the pain and the suffering that we see is not so basic. It's more on the emotional, psychological level. It's the level of suffering, mental suffering. And so so we don't always know what to do. But that just simply that presence, not turning away. You know, that is really compassion. There's a quote by Sharon Salzberg, which is very beautiful, about compassion. And she addresses this idea that you know, well, if compassion isn't always about jumping in and fixing things or doing things, then you know, is it just passive? So she says, sometimes that we think to develop an open heart, to be truly loving and compassionate, means that we need to be passive, to allow others to abuse us, to smile and let anyone do what they want with us. Yet this is not what is meant by compassion. Quite the contrary. Compassion is not at all weak. It is the strength that arises out of seeing the true nature of suffering in the world. Compassion allows us to bear witness to that suffering, whether it is in ourselves or in others, without fear. It allows us to name injustice without hesitation, and to act strongly with all the skill at our disposal. To develop this mind state of compassion is to learn to live, as the Buddha put it, with sympathy for all living beings, without exception. And so perhaps it would be compassion that would lead us to prevent somebody from harming another. Did you tell me this story about Kamala Masters, or did you tell it in the group?
I told you.
You told
somebody
me.
Somebody else we were having.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so there was this, Pascal was telling me this week about this teacher, this wonderful teacher from Hawaii named Kamala Masters, and she was on the street once, and she noticed a couple of young guys, and they were arguing, you know, and they were, you know, really, really seriously arguing, you know, and yelling at each other, and they began to, you know, start getting physically violent, pushing each other, and she just, you know, like without thought, she just kind of went right for them, and she started cursing and saying, "You effing, you know, this and that." And she was just really powerful and strong, and said, "You stupid, what are you doing?" And just pulled them apart. You know, because she knew that that's what was needed. You know, the shock of seeing this little, you know, beautiful little woman, you know, cursing her head off. But she was also powerful. And she did it out of compassion, not only for the person who was being pushed around, but also for the person who was doing the pushing. Because, you know, how much regret, how much suffering could that cause if he really did harm to the other? So we can, you know, our compassion is not only to protect, you know, the being harmed, but also that who's perpetrating the harm. And You know, of course, we talked a lot about being with painful experience, our inner, our shadow, being opening to the shadow, and compassion is so important in that, to just have this heart of acceptance, of not turning away, of being present. You know, when we open to compassion, we face self-judgment. So we face that self-judgment. And when we open to compassion to others, we face our judgment of others. So we bring compassion to the judgment. You know, we bring compassion to that closed heart, that judging heart, that heart which has been hurt and has learned to judge, that heart which has closed because it felt dangerous to stay open. And so we bring compassion and we bring forgiveness. There's this story I read in a book by Thich Nhat Hanh. Very beautiful. You know, his stories are so simple and so beautiful. About this man who had so much anger against his father because his father had been so harsh, so judging, unaccepting. And it felt to this man who was now grown up, you know, had experienced all this as a child, a young child, and it felt to him like his father had never loved him. And Thich Nhat Hanh did a kind of a guided meditation with him, and he connected with his father as a 5-year-old boy. And he remembered seeing a picture. He remembered seeing a picture of his father, you know, with his parents, you know, and his parents looking, you know, very stern, and this little kind of innocent, you know, kid just taking all this in, and he realized that that this was the only way his father knew how to love him. You know, and it just helped him to, this understanding helped him to open to compassion to his father and recognize that he had been loved all along in the only way his father knew how to love him. And so this was an opening to forgiveness through understanding. And, you know, often our hearts get closed because we've been hurt. And our hearts get closed to ourselves because we've hurt others. And we carry guilt around with others. So it's hard for us to feel this love for ourselves because we're judging ourselves. We feel guilty. We failed. We've hurt. And so, you know, forgiving is it doesn't mean, you know, especially when we talk about forgiveness to others, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be reconciled with them. Because if that person is still doing those same kinds of behaviors, if that person has denied that they've ever hurt us, has denied that they've ever been unkind, if we find that whenever we're with them, you know, it just starts all over again. Maybe we've distanced ourselves, or maybe they've died. Maybe they're gone. So it's not always possible to reconcile. So I draw a distinction between reconciliation and forgiveness. The only time that forgiveness is always reconciliation is when we forgive ourselves. We stop dividing ourselves against ourselves. Because when we're judging ourselves, who's judging who? You know, what mind is judging what mind? What heart is judging what heart? You know, we're somehow trying to divide ourselves, and it makes us feel, it's painful to do that. So forgiving ourselves is so important. There's a beautiful and kind of humorous saying that I heard from my primary teacher, Matthew Flickstein. Not sure if he coined it or somebody else did, but forgiveness is giving up on having had a better past. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness is giving up on having had a better past, which is kind of funny when we think about it, because, you know, we can't change the past. The past was the past. You know, what happened, you know, and if we had, you know, a father who always seemed angry, or was absent, or, you know, or a mother who seemed to judge us, or we feel that we failed somehow to love our children or our parents, or, you know, what was in the past is past. We can't fix it. And sometimes, I mean, we can, if we want reconciliation, we can find ways to, with another person, we can find ways to reconnect and address it, perhaps. But simply accepting, it just allows the heart to relax, you know, to give up, to say, okay, this is how it was. And I don't need to keep, you know, kind of this armor around my heart. I don't need to keep, you know, repeating these angry thoughts or defending myself. You know, I can accept that the past was what it was. And sometimes doing this also opens us to the gifts that are present through accepting, you know, the gifts of compassion. Because if we don't acknowledge that we've experienced pain and suffering in our own lives, or caused it, it's hard to be compassionate to others, you know, who are experiencing it and are perhaps causing it as well. So forgiveness. There's a series. Just I'm not going to lead us in this as a guided meditation, but just to put them out so that you hear them, and maybe just take them into the heart. There's a traditional series of phrases that are offered as a contemplation on forgiveness. And first, it reaches out to others who have hurt me. And the phrase is, you know, to whoever has caused harm to me, intentionally or unintentionally. But sometimes people hurt us, and they don't really know, right? Lots of times that happens. To whoever has caused harm to me, intentionally or unintentionally, through thought, word, or deed, I offer my forgiveness. Just, you know, and we can't always offer full forgiveness. Sometimes we begin by just opening up to that possibility where maybe we were holding a lot of anger and hatred and resentment. Sometimes just saying that maybe it would be possible to forgive. And it's something that will happen over time. You know, if we incline the heart, if we open to that intention to offer forgiveness to the other. So it's gentle. We don't force forgiveness. It's something that we just, we hold it open as a possibility, and it's something that happens, you know, like insight. It just springs up in a natural way. And then the second phrase is, to whoever I have harmed, to whoever I have caused harm, intentionally or unintentionally, in thought, word, or deed, I did it out of order. Anyway, I ask forgiveness. So I meant to do this one third. To whoever I have caused harm. So it's a kind of an opening to the possibility of, may you forgive me. You know, I can't make you forgive me. Maybe it's still hurting. You know, but, you know, it's just expressing that desire to be forgiven. Because sometimes in our minds, you know, because we can't acknowledge this desire to be forgiven, we justify ourselves and we build stories. But, you know, we can simply articulate this desire to be forgiven to whoever I have caused harm, intentionally or unintentionally, in thought, word, or deed. May you forgive me. And then the one I was going to say second, in any ways that I have harmed myself, I have created harm to myself, intentionally or unintentionally, in thought, word, or deed, I offer this forgiveness to myself. I forgive myself. You know, so, you know, opening the heart and just receiving this forgiveness, you know, and it's very simple, and we don't need to rationalize it. You know, I did some things when I was young that I felt guilty about for years, and mostly things that just harmed myself, And I talked to a therapist about it once, and she said, you know, well, you were so young, and there were so many things in your life, and you were confused, and yeah, that helped. It helped. It helped me be a little more gentler with myself. But it was really this simple opening the heart to accepting. That's just what happened. That's how life unfolded. That's what happened. I, who am not I, the same I now that was at that time, or I is just a perception, but, you know, this being manifesting life now is a very different being. So there's that identification through time, but yeah, that's, the forgiveness is an essential piece, because saying, well, I'm a different person then, can feel, you know, it's a rationalization. You know, yeah, but, you know, we do carry forward our experiences. So just the receiving of acceptance from ourselves, of this manifested, this is how life unfolded. And feeling that opening to compassion is such a healing thing. So, and we can perhaps, it can be part of our closing, you know, as we can do this just internally, and so at some point, you know, just if there's any way that I have harmed another, intentionally or unintentionally, I ask for forgiveness. If there's any way that I've harmed myself this week in this, you know, judging myself or comparing myself, know, I forgive myself. And if there's any way that that anyone has harmed me, intentionally or unintentionally, I offer you my forgiveness. We can do that for each other, for ourselves. So, so I've talked a little bit longer, and we need to close. So we're not going to open for discussion right now, but there'll be a time at the end, and anything that you want to express, you know, which was formed by your experience, well, there'll be a time for that self-expression. So, so anyway, thank you. Thank you for listening. So, Mr. Pascal.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.